Jesus was a real stumbling block to the Jews, and one of those reasons could be found in the second commandment of the Ten Commandments. They knew that God did not want graven images of himself. But yet, there's Jesus claiming to be God. Not just a graven image, but God in the person and in the flesh. They just couldn't reconcile that. They couldn't understand what was really going on in that second command that God gave them in the Ten Commandments. You shall have no graven images of me. So what about making images of Jesus? We'll talk about that today as our series on the Ten Commandments continues here on Abounding Grace. We invite you to spend time with us today as Pastor Chris Gordon explores some of the answers to that question. Here's Chris now.
I invite you to turn tonight to Exodus chapter 32. Exodus chapter 32, we're continuing our study in the Ten Commandments. And tonight we come to the second part of the second commandment. And if the law of God, I should say, never presses us or pushes us a bit, and it's just easy, then we probably haven't heard the law the way that we should. There typically are two commandments that people struggle with the most. And that is the second commandment and the fourth commandment. And now we're on the second commandment, looking particularly at his will for us in the second commandment. So last time we looked specifically at worship, and now we're looking at what God is talking about when he references making images. So we're going to confess together Lord's Day 35. If you have page, the Forms and Prayers book, page 243, page 243, there's three question and answers there we're going to say together, and then we're going to read our text tonight from Exodus chapter 32, seeking to understand God's will for us in the second commandment. So here's question 96 on page 243. What is God's will for us in the second commandment? That we in no way make any image of God, nor worship him in any other way than has been commanded in his word. May we then not make any image at all? God cannot and may not be visibly portrayed in any way. Although creatures may be portrayed, yet God forbids making or having such images in order to worship them or serve God through them. But may not images as books for the unlearned be permitted in churches? No, we should not try to be wiser than God. He wants the Christian community instructed by the living preaching of his word, not by idols that cannot even talk. And again, I guess I should say, I didn't really put that together in my brilliance this morning, but think of Romans 10 this morning, where it said specifically how he wants us to live. It is by faith in the word. And that's where we are tonight in looking at this great commandment. So I'm going to read Exodus chapter 32. Exodus chapter 32. And having that this morning, tonight, we will be looking at verses 1 through 8. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, "Up, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what's become of him." So Aaron said to them, "Take off the rings of gold that are in your ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people took off the rings of gold that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made a golden calf. And they said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord." And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go down, for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They have made for themselves a golden calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it, and said, 'These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt.'" I'm going to read a few more verses. "And the Lord said to Moses, 'I have seen this people, and behold, it's a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them in order that I may make a great nation of you. We'll stop the reading there. And back in Exodus chapter 20, the specific commandment I will just read to you in the second commandment is, verse 4, you shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. And there we'll end tonight the reading of God's word. I confess tonight that when I first heard someone tell me years ago that images of Jesus were wrong and that the second commandment forbids them, I did what a lot of people do. Oh, come on. That just seems a little bit over the top. It's just sort of one of those gray areas that, you know, some people are being Pharisees about. And we've got a lot of Pharisees in the Christian faith. And I mean, how could it be so wrong? Let's face it. If it helps somebody with their faith, why would God forbid such a thing? That doesn't make any sense to me. And then you have all the other issues that come along with this, with the Jesus, it's Jesus. He became human. I mean, come on, we can depict him. He was human. And this is how I used to think. I thought, why in the world would there ever be a problem with this? And firstly, and then secondly, I thought to myself, well, at first glance, the commandment doesn't seem overly clear about this, or maybe it does, and I'm just ignorant. Especially on the question of Jesus' humanity. That's a thing I want to wrestle with, a thing I need to think about with you together tonight. I'm fairly confident that that's how many people think. I know, in fact, that's how many people think, because this is one of those sermons. I said the second and the fourth. If I went through the commandments and I said, don't murder, don't steal, don't kill, no one's going to get mad at me. But say you've got to keep the Sabbath, and all of a sudden everyone gets a little bit worried. Or say you can't make images, and then we go a little bit off the rails and say, there we go, that's the reform stuff. But what actually helped me on this particular issue was actually looking more carefully at the commandment itself and then seeing why the Lord was so strong about it in the commandment and the consequences, thinking through that, of making images of Jesus that helped me to appreciate why God put a guardrail around this. And again, I've wanted to present in the third use of the law the commandments positively for you to see as children, as redeemed children, that the Lord is protecting you. That was why we have, we believe in a principle of worship. He's protecting us. He's protecting you from abusive pastors who want to turn this into a show. That's what we looked at last time. And he's also protecting us from something else in the second commandment. And that's what I want to consider with you tonight to help you in the Christian life to live by faith and not by sight. And that's a really important thing to say up front. Because that's what this commandment really is all about. The Heidelberg Catechism says something interesting tonight, that we are no way to make any image of God. God cannot and may not be portrayed. So I want to begin just for a moment here tonight with you, looking at the commandment itself, the nature of the commandment. And you'll notice that as I read in Exodus 20, verse 4, God was saying very specifically there something that is rather clear when you read it, that we should not make any carved image of anything that is up in the heavens or on the earth or in the water or under the earth. There should be no images made that inform or guide or affect our devotion and worship to the Lord. That is not their intention. That is not what the Lord has for us in the Christian faith, in all of the faith. And I don't want you bowing down to them, and I don't want you worshiping them. That is the commandment. Now notice that the first commandment said, you shall have no other gods before me. So we looked at that. Idolatry, the problem of idolatry. And maybe we feel it's a little bit disconnected from this, but we learned last time that idolatry is a lot more than prevalent and prominent in our lives than we often recognize. It's anything that we put our trust in. Alongside of, says our catechism, the one true God. It's dividing your loyalties. Idolatry. It's saying, you know, you can falter between these two opinions. Isaiah said, why are you faltering? Choose one. It's serving God and mammon. It's introducing alongside of the only true God something else that you run to. And we looked at last time, anything that you run to when you're under, you can figure it out, under stress and under problems in life. And what are you running to ease that? You'll find your idol. You'll find your idol. So the first commandment was to get rid of all false gods and worship the Lord only. Well, what's different now in the second commandment, the second essentially says, now that you've gotten rid of your idol and you've put away the idol from you, once you've detected and once you've destroyed and once you've ground that idol to bits, in other words, you've put it to death in your life, we need to address how you are to worship the only true God. That's a really important commandment in the second commandment that this deals with. Now, I want you, said the Lord, as we looked at last time, to worship me properly. And we looked at principles for that. And we looked at that as to be guided by his word, isn't it? He's holy. And the Lord gives commands in worship for how he wants to be worshiped. Well, now he includes in this, particularly the second commandment, I don't want you to erect any false images or create in any way any images of me. That is breaking the second commandment. Why? I want you to notice something, that in the commandment itself, the Lord said, I'm a jealous God, visiting the iniquity on the fathers, upon the children, to the third and fourth generation, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Isn't it interesting that he said something like that in the middle of the second? Which means, I know people aren't going to take this very seriously. In the old covenant, I want you to know there's going to be serious consequences in your homes if you roll your eyes at this. Serious consequences. He knew people would roll their eyes in history at this. And people would say, oh, this God's being too much. He knew that people would not take this seriously. And here was the effect. Okay, fathers, in your homes and in your families, if you don't want to take this seriously, there will be a serious consequence. I will visit in the old covenant and punish your children. So we want to think about this for a minute, because God was laying and embedding something here in the commandment itself that was leveling serious consequences of breaking this commandment. Your disregard for the second commandment will have an engulfing effect on your family. How so? You will see something happen in your children. You will see something that will be harmful to your children develop because of the way that you regarded my command. Well, what's the effect? Is there any consequence of that today? And I think that's something we need to wrestle with and think about a little bit. If you take seriously what I'm saying and you hate idols and you refuse to make images of me, think about this. I will show mercy to thousands, and the idea is generations, to those who love me and keep my commandments. So the Israelite lived with this. Israel lived with this in the commandment. And the general rule is, if I look at a father, and there's something embedded in this, not that the Lord holds the sins of fathers against the sins of their children. He doesn't do that. He told us he doesn't do that in the new covenant. But there is cause and effect, and there are consequences to actions. If I look at a father who disregards the worship of the Lord and doesn't take it seriously and complains about it and doesn't take seriously the call to reverence the Lord and his holiness, what will I generally see in his children? The same thing. If I look at a father who doesn't take the worship of the Lord very seriously and doesn't make it a priority in his life and thinks that it's a free-for-all, what will I generally see in his children? The same thing. And this is where we have to think a little bit about the second commandment. Where there is great love for the Lord, and there is in the households of the Lord people who take seriously the fourth commandment, the Sabbath day. That will spill over into the life of their families. if they can easily disregard it and look at points of disregard, children will remember that. So this is important to take seriously the law of the Lord, why the Lord puts this in place for us, and to think about how we're training the next generations. That's a surely an application of this in these commandments and why it's so important. Now, before we get to the larger question tonight of images, I want to give a story to help you with this, because you know I love to not just read a catechism and exposit it without showing you from Scripture that this very truth that is being conveyed to us in this catechism is something that is exhibited in the Word of God to preserve us and to keep us in the truth of the commandment. And I want you to notice tonight, as we come to Exodus chapter 32, that we come to this particular event that we've looked at a few times, and I want to just walk through this briefly and then turn to the specific question of why images are so dangerous. I want you to think about the scenario here, the context for a minute. In this particular passage, the law had been given and we didn't even get out of Sinai, and the second commandment becomes the one, first and second, that gets broken out of the gates. For 40 days and nights, Moses had been up on the mountain, and God had Israel right where he wanted them, at the foot of the mountain, waiting upon him. And in chapter 32, we read something very intriguing. Now, when the people saw that Moses delayed from coming down the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us God." Now, I want you to catch that, because that's important. It really should not be read as plural. Make us God. Make us this God. It's the reason John Calvin said our hearts are constant idol factories. Make us God that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. And my initial response is, how in the world could you be so deceived so quickly? I mean, it's really meant to be felt as an astonishing moment in the text. They had been at the foot of Sinai for at least a month. It's getting very close to the end of the 40-day period where Moses was up on the mountain, and the whole scene is overrun with impatience. And that's a crucial, crucial point to the second commandment. Patience versus impatience. I'll come back to that at the end. God was doing nothing for us. We can't see him. He's taking us nowhere. We're going nowhere. We're stuck. We didn't come out of the land of Egypt to sit here. You ever feel that way in life? You're going absolutely nowhere. You just feel stuck. Sinai is not very far from Egypt, and what should have been a 2-month journey to the promised land, because of their impatience, God would say, "I'm going to make you patient. You're getting 40 years of wandering." Tensions are short. The anger begins to build. 1 week passes, and another week, and another week, and another. And what starts the service in the camp is, this Moses, this pastor, where is he? Notice the natural propensity of the human heart. Nothing's happening. We see nothing. We're not getting enough action. We're not going anywhere. Moses is gone. This is not what we signed up for. I mean, the worship services back in Egypt for the Isis Bowl were amazing. We could dance, could cut ourselves, we could drink. We didn't come out of Egypt just to sit here. So the impatience is overwhelming here, and dissatisfaction continues to grow until it gets so bad that they demanded, they go to the assistant pastor, they go to Aaron. You have to really understand what Aaron faced at the foot of the mountain was a bunch of angry Israelites. Come, Aaron, you make us God. God's not helping us. Here's the problem. We don't see anything. We don't see. So they decided to fix the problem. Now, isn't this just a remarkable providence that this morning, don't say in your heart, "I will pull down Jesus from heaven." There's your application right here. I will form Jesus myself. Israel begins to think, in Egypt we could see the gods that the pharaohs said delivered their people. Where is this God? So they say, rejecting the first and the second commandment, all in one sweep here. So after saying they would keep it, verse 2, Aaron said, break off your gold earrings, which are in your ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. So all the people broke off the earrings in their ears, and they brought them to Aaron, and he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. They took matters into their own hands, didn't they? No. They didn't just take matters into their own hands. Listen to me. They took God into their own hands, and they formed him. And they said, we're going to reform him. And they made him, here's the irony. They made him into the image of the Isis bull. What a image to make and then to call it God. Aaron presents the bull and they have a great worship service. Boy, the energy was there. They bowed down. They got on their feet and they said, oh Yahweh, who delivered us. The key to understanding is that this was not intending to reject the Lord and serve Baal. The key to this is they wanted to bring Yahweh to them their way and form him so they could see him. We know this is the right interpretation because we read that around this calf, verse 4, they erected an altar. They actually tried to bring the law of the altar and actually conform it around the bull. The commandment of how to perform the altar worship. And then they celebrated the feast to the Lord, they said, which was the bull. And then they corrupted the entire worship of the Lord with idolatry and creating a God who they cut down to manageable size, that they could control the deity and that they could make him do what they wanted to do. They were up and ready. Finally, some action. Finally, I can see. Finally, I'm getting something alive. Tired of all this deadness. Tired of a God who lives in a beetle's hole. Finally, they had a circumstance so they could experience God in a way that made them feel alive. I want to stop and reflect for just a minute here on what the Lord is showing us. We have this natural tendency, beloved, to be dissatisfied with God, not only because his ways we're displeased with. A lot of people would come to hear the word if they could only make that word say what they wanted to say. But we also are disappointed and dissatisfied with God because we don't see him. They rose up early on the next day. They offered burnt offerings and peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. They had made this image, and then you get the Lord's response. Moses, get down there. Now notice, for your people, whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They've turned aside quickly out of the way in which I commanded. They've made themselves a molded calf. They've worshipped, they sacrificed to it. And guess what they did, Moses? They said, this is God. O Israel, who brought you out of Egypt, can you get down there? And we know the ugly scene at the foot of the mountain where Moses smashes the law and the covenant is broken. Now, this is where I want to transition for a minute to think about why God commands no images. What's happening here? All image making is, number one, a dissatisfaction with the revelation of God to you in his word.
This is Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Just enough time to leave you with our contact information. We'd love to hear from you. It's always a delight knowing you're being blessed by this radio program. Reach out to us at our website, agradio.org. Questions@agradio.org. If you wish to email us any questions you might have or praise reports, comments about the program, or give us a call, 888-504-8805. By the way, when you visit our website, agradio.org, tons of resource material for you to tap into, as well as links to our other platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Again, all at agradio.org. And that phone number, once again, is 888-504-8805. Looking to write to us? If you're old school, the address for your envelope is Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Hey, thanks for joining us today. Until next time, God bless. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, this is Chris Gordon, pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. I'd like to invite you to our Sunday worship services at 9:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock p.m. on Sunday. We have two worship services, 9:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock p.m. We preach Christ and Him crucified with the goal that you would live in the joy of this comfort in the knowledge of the forgiveness of all of your sins. 1864 North Broadway is the address here in Escondido. We'd love to see you this Sunday.